Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken, so to speak.
Season 3, Episode 1 of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Redcon 1, Old School Labs, Six Pack Bags, and Balance Body Labs. All right, welcome everybody to a new season of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. This is now season number 3, and we are going to be talking about the 1981 Mr. Olympia contest, and this, of course, is Episode 1 of that new season. And our guest today is going to be the head judge of the 1981 Mr. Olympia. His name is Roger Schwab, and he was on our show before when we were talking about the 40th anniversary of the movie Pumping Iron. And Roger, as I said, was actually the head judge. He was in charge of all the judges for the 1981 Mr. Olympia contest. We are going to be talking to Roger, and we are going to be analyzing the score sheets of the judges. A lot of people say that contest was fixed, and Weider fixed it for Franco to win, or Arnold fixed it for Franco to win. Well, we're going to examine the score sheets. As we'll talk about with Roger, it was done by a point system back then. Also, the 1980 Olympia was done by a point system. So that was part of the problem. That was part of the controversy that created the 1981 Olympia. And me and Roger are going to examine each judge's score. So this is going to be really interesting. I don't think this has ever been done before in regards to the 1981 Mr. Olympia. And as I mentioned, we are brought to you today by our sponsors, Redcon 1. Everybody wants to be a champion. Everyone wants to be the best. But at Redcon 1, they believe in working hard to achieve your goals. Whether it's to kill it in the gym or run a six-minute mile, Redcon 1 has something for those willing to put in the work. Their premium, clinically dosed pre-workout, Total War, is the perfect companion to your workout to give you the extra push to break through your mental and physical barriers. And then after your workout, you can fuel your body with the revolutionary MRE. And it's the only whole food complete meal replacement with protein coming from salmon, chicken, beef, and eggs. And their carbs come from sweet potatoes and oats and 10 grams of fat from MCT oil. This is the best tasting complete meal you will ever have. So go to redcon1.com and try the very best sports nutrition has to offer. Redcon 1, the highest state of readiness. And you can enter the discount code LEGENDS to get a 15% discount off your order as a favor to the Bodybuilding Legends show. We're also brought to you by Balance Body Labs. If you're working hard to achieve your physical best, you need the optimum level of nutrients to reach peak performance. When nutrients go missing, so does your ability to have a productive day. Balance Body Labs has an easy-to-use, at-home test kit to help you detect your nutrient levels. They offer three different categories of tests, one for endurance athletes, one for those training for a contest, and another for those trying to lose weight. You just choose your test, you take the sample test kit at home, you mail the test kit back, and then you log on for your results. They will test your vitamin levels, your amino acids, your testosterone, your cortisol levels, and your lactic acid levels. No more going to a doctor's office and then going through a painful blood test to get the results. If you don't know what your nutrient levels are, you won't be able to perform at your optimum levels. Balance Body Labs will get you there. Just log on to balancebodylabs.com and sign up for your easy-to-use, at-home test kit today. All right, in other news, we are also working on the Dorian Yates interview part 2, which will be on our video series for the Bodybuilding Legends show. It is completed. It should be up pretty soon. Last week, I just did a great interview with Mike Ashley. And Mike Ashley was called the natural guy, the natural champion. He competed in the 1980s. He won the world championships in 1986, which was, by the way, the first world championships that was drug tested. And Mike always claimed, long before natural bodybuilding started to get popularity, Mike always claimed to be a natural bodybuilder. And he competed with the very best in the IFBB, and he won several IFBB pro shows. In fact, his very first pro show was the 1987 Night of the Champions, where he took second place to Gary Stridham. So Mike has a really, really interesting story, and we're going to have that interview coming up probably next month on our Bodybuilding Legends Show videos, so be sure to check that out. Again, you want to go to bodybuildinglegendshow.com to check out the latest, not only with the podcast downloads, but also our video interviews and our articles that we put up every week.
We're also brought to you by Old School Labs, and Old School Labs makes uncompromisingly premium supplements. They draw on the wisdom of the golden era of fitness and bodybuilding to offer unique supplements to the discerning athlete. Old School Labs is the brand that I use, trust, and associate my name with, and it's the brand that I personally use to compete and win the Natural Mr. Universe in the Masters division in 2012. I personally use the Vintage Blast and the Vintage Build in my workouts. I take that as my pre-workout drink, and they've also got a great supplement called Vintage Burn, which is a great fat burner. Go to oldschoollabs.com and use the discount code LEGEND12, and you'll get 12% off your order. You can also visit them at amazon.com. Old School Labs, supplements that make sense.
And we're also brought to you by Six Pack Bags. Six Pack Fitness creates premium, iconic meal management bags, healthy, competitor-friendly hot sauces, and accessories geared toward everyone from the serious athlete, bodybuilder, CrossFit, or fitness enthusiast. They provide stylish and innovative solutions for those who live active, healthy lifestyles, and their products are designed to keep everyone organized and prepared so they can focus on their fitness goals, training hard, eating right, and staying healthy. So check them out at sixpackbags.com and use the promo code LEGENDS10 to receive 10% off your total purchase. These bags are awesome. I am out in Chicago today because I came out here for the Labor Day weekend for my father's 80th birthday, and I brought one of these six-pack bags with me so I could bring all my meals with me for the weekend. So you guys really got to check these out. If you're serious about your diet and you need to bring your food with you on any occasion, go to sixpackbags.com and purchase one of these bags. It'll really be worth it. All right, that's it. I want to thank our sponsors for sponsoring Episode 1 of Season 3 of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we're going to talk about the 1981 Mr. Olympia. And here is our interview with the head judge of the 81 Olympia, Mr. Roger Schwab. Enjoy.
All right, we are on the phone now with Roger Schwab, and our topic for this season is the 1981 Mr. Olympia. And I'm really glad to have Roger back because Roger was a big part of 1981 Mr. Olympia. He was the head judge, so he was in control of all the judges, and he also handled all the comparisons on stage, and he was right there for the whole contest. So it's a pleasure to have you back, Roger.
And it's a pleasure to be with you, John.
All right, let's talk about this contest. This was probably one of the top two most controversial Mr. Olympias ever, if you consider the 1980 Mr. Olympia more controversial. I was at this contest, as you were also. So, first of all, Roger, let's talk about your role in the contest. You were, as you said, you were the head judge. So tell us exactly what you were in control of here.
Well, after 1980, Bill Pearl, I would say, basically retired from his position of head judge, and Oscar State appointed me as head judge of the professional division of the IFBB. And I accepted it. And I was also very aware of the 1980 Mr. Olympia contest in Australia, which I had mentioned to you previously. I recused myself because I had trained Mike Mentzer prior to 1980 Mr. Olympia contest, and I thought it was incorrect for me to go to Australia to judge that contest. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you, if I had gone, I'm pretty sure the results of that contest would also have been different. However, in 1981, before the Mr. Olympia contest, as I related to Rick Wayne way back when he wrote the book called Muscle Wars, I wrote a letter before the 1981 Mr. Olympia contest to Ben Weider, telling him that this was the future of Mr. Olympias would depend on 1981 being a contest that people could look back on and know that it was judged correctly. So I had all good intentions, but I can tell you that everything, it all fell apart, and in retrospect, I should have seen it happening before the contest even started.
Yeah, that's a good point, because we hear all the time that people who don't know anything about the sport, they'll look at the 1980 or 1981 Mr. Olympia, and they'll say, well, the contest was rigged. But, you know, I've judged many, many years in Chicago for the MPC, and I've never had a promoter come up to us and say, hey, guys, this is what we're going to happen. You know, I want this guy to win. And so a lot of people think, well, Weider rigged it for Arnold, or Weider rigged it for Franco, or Arnold rigged it for Franco. So tell us a little bit about that, Roger, because you have some insight into that also.
In all the years that I judged IFBB professional contests from the mid-70s to early 1980s, Joe Weider never once interfered with the judging panel, nor did his brother Ben Weider.
Mm-hmm.
However, that being said, and I think, John, we might have discussed this in the past, Ben Weider, with all good intentions, wanted to look at bodybuilding in a way that would possibly get bodybuilding involved in the Olympic Games. And as you know, the Olympic Games on subjective sports were oftentimes based on a point system.
Okay.
And so he wanted bodybuilding judged on a point system. That, to me, and I wrote in my letter to him also that I believe that the Mr. Olympia should be judged on a placing system.
Mm-hmm.
And that would put the judges on the spot to actually pick the winners second, third, and fourth place. With a point system, it was way too easy for the judges, in my opinion, to be intimidated and give high scores to the bodybuilders who, you know, for the most part, they looked up to. And
yeah.
no judge wanted to put a bodybuilder down with 13 or 12 points and somebody with 20. So the judges seemed to get around it by giving 20 points, not only to one bodybuilder, sometimes to two, three, or four in the same round. So at the end of the contest, it was almost anybody's contest to win, which seems good on the surface, but it really wasn't, because a guy who could place fifth could win that contest. So that was a mistake that I brought up before the contest, but unfortunately I was outvoted by Oscar State and Ben 2-1. I also wrote a letter to Ben talking about the judges. Ben was with the idea of bodybuilding someday being an Olympic sport, to have an international judging panel.
Right.
In theory, that sounds great, but in practice, it wasn't great. In my opinion, the judges for the 1981 Mr. Olympia contest were certainly not the most qualified judges. There were three judges, Jim Mannion, Winston Roberts, those two, and myself, who I think could judge any contest objectively, along with Wayne DeMilla, who was not there, was another person who I believe could have judged the contest objectively. However, Doug Evans of Wales was not really an international judge of many contests. Franco Fassi of Italy was a close friend of Franco.
Right.
Al Gwindi of Egypt had already been, remember, suspended for some reason of favoring an Egyptian bodybuilder in a previous contest. And Mrs. Matayuma of Japan was the IFBB representative of Japan, but certainly was not an IFBB caliber judge. All those things in retrospect make me seem like I'm smart. But at the time, even though I'd written the letter and procrastinated and argued, I lost 2-1 to Oscar and Ben about the ultimate judging panel and the point system. So I take responsibility also.
Yeah, I had, I don't know if this is correct, but the judges I had on the list here include Jacques Bloemhart from Belgium. He was a good judge, right?
He was, I should have included him. Jacques Bloemhart of Belgium, Jim Mannion, Winston Roberts, myself, and Wayne DeMilla, in my opinion, should have been the five judges for this contest. I think you had a different result, and I think every one of us five knew the bodybuilders, but were strong enough mentally to be able to stand up to the bodybuilders. And I think we were respected enough that they would have respected our decision.
Okay, so he also had Svenel Thorsen from Denmark, and he was a good friend of Arnold and Franco also, right?
Right, who was the previous year suspended from a contest,
mm-hmm.
of which he judged a fellow Danish or Swedish bodybuilder as the top one, when he was placed fourth by most of the other judges. I knew Sven, and he was a very personable guy, but I don't think he was ready to be judging this contest.
Right.
And in retrospect, I think I'm correct. But not only with the judges, as I said, the point system just simply did not work in this contest. And it was humiliating. I mean, I knew the results of the contest after the first three rounds, and I knew this was going to be the greatest booing contest in the history of the sport, even more so than the previous year. and I was part of it.
So now, after the previous year, after Arnold won in 1980, everybody, well, Boyer Coe and Mike Mentzer and Frank Zane and Albert Beck was all boycotted the contest because they said, well, if Arnold's promoting the show and Frank was going in it, you know Frank was going to win. So the Weeders had to be pretty skeptical about this whole thing, like, oh, we don't want another controversy for our biggest contest ever, right, before going into the contest.
I think that you're right in what you're saying, but I really think that it didn't matter to the Weeders if Franco won that contest. The exposure in the magazines was great. Even with the disaster in Australia, bodybuilding was still at its almost, you know, it might have been slightly past its peak of the late 70s, but still right near the zenith of the golden age. And the sport was getting, you know, people were still reading the magazines. You know, I'm correct, because at Columbus, every seat was taken in that house. I mean, it was a wild crowd. And the enthusiasm for bodybuilders back then was everybody had their favorites. It could have been, you know, Boyer Coe, and if Mike Mentzer and Frank Zane had entered, no doubt it would have been the greatest contest of all time.
Yeah.
But they were, in retrospect, they were smart, and they stayed out, and they didn't think they would get a fair shake because Arnold had something to do with it. But I would say to you that although Arnold was backstage, when I was the head judge, whatever I told him, however I told him I wanted the lineup or how they're to do the mandatory, so forth and so on, he was in agreement with. So he was there, and his presence was felt, and I'm sure he wanted Franco to win the contest, but he never interfered.
Okay, so now you were on stage, right? You were directing.
I was actually on the stage next to these guys. So they would come out from the wings, and they would walk up to the podium, and 4,500 people would be seeing the competitor and myself. And I would give each competitor sort of a pep talk up there, saying, you know, everybody is watching you. Hit your poses hard. Hold your contracted position. Make sure. And this is something I would tell every competitor all the time. Make sure that when you're going from pose to pose, you keep your abdominal muscles tightened, because there's always a tendency, as you know, to relax, especially when they were standing around in the wings. You could, somebody taking a picture backstage, you could see somebody relaxed, and you really wanted for this day in your career to be at your best every second, and it took a lot of mental focus. So I tried to instill that upon them when they were up on the podium and doing the 7 mandatory poses.
So from your perspective then, Roger, looking at the competitors, give us your review of the top competitors and where you thought they were going to place based on the prejudgment.
Okay. To me, this is just my opinion then.
Right.
It hasn't really changed. Danny Padilla, I believe, weighed 155 pounds. And he had never really competed less than 180 or even a little bit heavier. And you know, besides the fact that he was 5'3", he was almost in perfect proportion for his height. And every body part had a long muscle belly and a short tendon.
Mm-hmm.
So his bicep, triceps, his pecs, his abs, his quads, and his calves. And if you take off the intercellular fat, he was at his epitome of muscularity. His, you know, his face was very, very drawn, with his cheekbones, his high cheekbones drawn, but he was not missing anything. He had my vote right from the beginning, although I don't think most of the audience thought so. In second place, I had Tom Platz. I think the Platz, this was definitely his best contest. He was in his best shape of his life in this very day. Unfortunately, again, in 1982, when I was a head judge in Wembley, England, Platz had torn his right biceps at Gold's Gym, I believe, doing dumbbell flies.
Yeah.
Got caught in the stretch position with his arms out to the side and tore the insertion of his bicep and didn't have it repaired for 1982, and like Dorian Yates subsequently. So Platz was at his zenith, but still at his very, very best, and he was very, very good. His lower body was, in my opinion, symmetrically was not Danny Padilla.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not to take anything away from Platz. I had third place. I had Roy Callender. I thought Callender was tremendously muscular, the best that I had seen him.
Right.
You know, genetics deserted him below the knee.
Yeah.
And like a lot of black bodybuilders, his calves were high with a long tendon. Like Bill Grant, I would say. Grant had tremendous genetics also and was a tremendous bodybuilder. And so Callender, zilcho fat, looked very, very muscular and felt great about it. Fourth, I had Dickerson fourth, and I might have made a mistake there. In retrospect, Yusuf Wilkosh was in really, really good shape. He placed sixth, but really had no weaknesses. He just didn't have the greatest body parts that he stood out. So Wilkosh could have been fourth or Dickerson, and I had Franco fifth or sixth. Franco's muscularity of his pecs was almost as good as it was at his best, in my opinion, 1976. And he could do nothing about this, but his legs, after the terrible accident in the World's Strongest Men, his legs really weren't anywhere near the other top competitors. Plus, he had a case of gyno in his right pec, and he was muscular and great, but he, in my opinion, he wasn't Mr. Olympia that day. And it was very sad because I had spent some time with him in Philadelphia before the contest, and I told him, you know, you have a great chance of winning this contest, and he did win, but it was a humiliating win, I would say, all around.
So now, take us through your opinion of how it went at the prejudging, because the crowd was really, really vocal, and it was kind of up in the air of who's going to win. And I agree with you. I think the top three was Padilla, Platts, and Callender. So tell us your opinion about what the crowd reaction was and who you thought was leading the pack just from the prejudging and from the crowd reaction.
Well, since I saw the scores in all the rounds, I knew exactly what was going on.
Okay.
But
did you see the scores after every round?
I saw the scores every round. As a matter of fact, I was one who added up the scores after every round.
Okay.
And trust me, I knew it was going to be imminent disaster. And there was nothing I could do about it, and nor was there anything I anticipated to do about it, because that wasn't my job. I was doing my job, and
As a head judge, you can't step in and say, "Hey, your scores are out of line."
No, I can't. I mean, because these between you and I don't know if it was public information, but the Japanese judge, Mrs. Matayuma, we didn't count her scores at all.
Oh, okay.
She wasn't qualified. She shouldn't have been there.
She was that far up.
Yeah, and it wasn't her gig. I just don't understand why she was there. You know, this, of course, is 30-some-odd years later. But regardless, you know, bodybuilding crowds in the 70s and 80s were quite sophisticated.
Mm-hmm.
Only after Dorian and how great Dorian got in 1993, the crowd started really going in the 90s for tremendous mass.
Right.
But in the 70s and 80s, I think the crowd had a very sophisticated eye. And you can usually tell by the initial call-outs and the initial reception by the crowd who the favorites were. And in this contest, I believe right off the bat that the favorite was Tom Platts. Platts just looked completely different than he had before. And I think, again, Danny and Callender had initial great receptions. You know, also, John, as you know, the magazine exposure has so much to do about crowd reaction.
Mm-hmm.
And the magazines, Callender was never featured in the magazines anywhere near the way Platts was or Arnold was back in those days. So Callender didn't have the recognition factor, but as soon as he came on the stage, and he knew he was ready for this, he got a great, great applause. Franco, when he first came out, got great applause, but it seemed to stifle somewhat as he went on.
Yeah.
And Wilkosh, as good as he is, was very symmetrical, but didn't have that wow factor, if you know what I meant.
Mm-hmm.
So right off the bat, it was Platts with his thighs, Danny with his symmetry, and Callender with his muscularity.
Yeah, I agree. Now, let's talk about the comparisons when they did the mandatory poses, because Franco, despite his weakness in his legs, he showed a lot of confidence on stage. Even when I think maybe he thought, you know, hey, this is my contest to lose. I'm the only Mr. Well, yeah, he was the only Mr. Olympia winner up there, because I was going to say Dickerson, but he won it the year after. So all these other guys were guys who had never won the Olympia. He was coming back to Columbus after his five-year layoff and his miraculous comeback from his knee injury. Right when they got up on stage, I noticed Franco was always tensing. He was always crunching down. And there was a great picture of him and Padilla standing relaxed. And Padilla, despite all his perfection, is just standing relaxed while Franco was really tensed and hard. And I remember reading one of the magazines back then. They said that's where Franco had an advantage, because he was tensing all the time. So Franco was very confident, even though he didn't look perfect and his legs were under par. And I remember when they first came out in the lineup, Callender was standing right next to him, and Callender starts showing off his legs. Do you remember that, when he started showing off the sartorius muscle in his thigh?
And then that was right before Franco flexed his pecs, where you could see the separation of the upper pec and the lower pec.
Right.
You're exactly right. Franco was confident. He was built up before the competition as his comeback. And when he walked into the auditorium before the fans showed up, he was very, very confident that he was going to win. He was in a great mood, and he felt great about himself.
Yeah.
And, you know, and look, don't get me wrong. He was, he wasn't chopped liver. He was Franco Colombo, but he was not Franco Colombo of 1976.
Mm-hmm.
Just like Arnold wasn't Arnold in 1980, of Arnold of 1974.
Right.
That was both of their best years, in my opinion.
Right. And it seems like as the prejudging went on, as you said, Platts was starting to become the crowd favorite. And the one comparison that I'll never forget is when they had Platts, Franco, and I think it might have been Padilla, and they asked for the last pose, which was the ab and thigh pose. And so everybody started laughing in the audience, because they knew what was coming, and they knew Platts was going to hit this leg pose. And I remember Tom really waited it out. You know, he really let the tension build. And then I remember Franco was hitting his great abs, but he was trying to find like one cut in his thigh, and he didn't have anything. He was twisting his leg back and forth, and then Platts hit that leg shot. The crowd went absolutely nuts.
No, you're right. You remember it almost like it was yesterday.
Right.
Let me just, I want to interject this before I forget it. You know, the bodybuilders have to take some responsibility for that contest also, because when Oscar State, Ben Weider, and I sat in front of these bodybuilders at the bodybuilders meeting before the contest, there was not one objection raised as far as the judging panel was concerned. And
yeah.
In my opinion, there should have been. There was talk about the money distribution of the top 10 or top 6, which I think, if I remember, wound up being the top 8 got prize money. But there was not any discussion at all about the judges after the fiasco of the previous year. So I remember that, knowing that I was going to talk to you today, that I thought I should interject that they have to take some responsibility for this.
But do you think the competitors might have been put in a bad advantage or a bad position at that point? Because, you know, who's going to complain about the judges before they're being judged?
No, you're right. But, you know, sometimes in life you've got to stand up. I mean,
mm-hmm.
sometimes, in my opinion, that's why I wrote the letter to Ben Weider. But in retrospect, I was aware of these things, and I had the idea before the contest that this could turn into something less than right. And
right.
I take responsibility. It was my first year as head judge of the IFBB professional division, and it's definitely it weighed on me.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the different judges' points here. I got the article up in front of me. So for those that don't know, for the people that, and one thing I want to say too is I got to give it credit to the IFBB, because back then, even with the controversy of the 1980 and 81 Olympia, they printed out all the score sheets in the magazines. So this was all public knowledge. You could see what every judge placed. And I think you made a great point about that point system, because, and again, I'll explain this for the listeners who don't understand it, because this was 30 years ago. As you said, Ben Weider wanted to get bodybuilding in the Olympic Games. So he instituted this point system, which I think they were probably using that right with like figure skating and other subjective sports, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So the highest points you could get for a competitor was 20 points. And then you go down from there. You go 19, 18. But as you said, Roger, a judge could give multiple bodybuilders in one round 20 points or multiple bodybuilders in one round 19 points. He doesn't have to do it like the placement system where he's got to make a decision and he's got to say, this guy gets first, this guy gets second, this guy gets third, et cetera. So the way they did it was they would do three rounds during the prejudging. They had the relaxed round, and then you would do the comparisons. You would bring the guys up in comparisons, no matter, depending on what judge wanted what. And then they would do the mandatory poses, and then they finished off with their posing routine. So you had three rounds of judging. And so let's go over some of these point totals. So the highest of point total a competitor could get would be 60 points if he got 20 points in each round. So Jacques Bloemhart from Belgium, and this is just on the point system, he had Callender in first with 59 points, and he had Flats in second with 58 points, and then he had Danny Padilla and Joseph Wilcox tied with 56 points each in third place, and then he had Dickerson with 55 points and Franco in 54 points. So he was pretty much almost on the money, right? I mean, he had Callender, Flats, and Padilla in first, second, and third, and then he had Franco in sixth.
And this is a man who had judged international competitions for years and years and was a very experienced judge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I was looking at his points, and he even had Wilcox ahead of Dickerson and Franco.
Right, so continue.
Now, Winston Roberts from Canada, he gave Dickerson 60 points, so he gave him a perfect score, so he scored in first place.
Yeah, he always, you know, Winston always liked Dickerson's physique. I would say that Dickerson in 1981 and the other contests, that was his best year. He won the Olympia in 82. And again, I was the head judge of that one, and I thought that that was a poor decision also. But Dickerson, 81, in my opinion, was Dickerson's best year. He won all the Grand Prix almost that year. And he really, you know, didn't have big muscles, but boy, was he was very, very symmetrical, and you could always count on him to be in great shape. And at the time, after Corny had retired or come close to retiring, Dickerson was the best poser.
Right. And then Winston had Roy Callender in second with 58 points. Now, with Franco, he gave Franco a 19 in the first round, a 19 in the second round, and a 19 in the third round.
So, again, he didn't give him any first, but he had him awfully close.
Right.
So, you know, if one other judge goes 20-20-20, all of a sudden, you know, Winston's scores of 19-19-19 are close to 20s. And you can see how Franco could, if he was not the best of anybody's, but if one judge had him 20-20-20, all of a sudden he could be in first place. And that's ultimately what happened.
Right. Now he gave Platts only a 56, so he had Platts in fourth place. So he gave him a 19 in the first round, gave him a 19 in the second round, and then he gave him only an 18 in the third round. Now, why do you think that was? Because of the imbalance with the upper body and lower body?
Yes, I would have to say that. But in my opinion, in retrospect, Tom Platts at his best at that contest, and he was at his best.
Mm-hmm.
And Franco being off of his best, and especially, you know, in the leg comparisons, I think there was more of a disparity between their legs than their upper bodies. And that, and Platts' arms were better also. Now, Franco's back was better, and Franco's overall muscularity was better, but Platts' whole package, in my opinion, was higher than Franco's. I didn't see Franco placing ahead of Platts in any round.
But he scored Padilla pretty high. Padilla gave him a 20 in the first round, which is a perfect score. And then he gave him 19 in the second round. And then he gave him a 19 in the third round. So he scored him 58 points.
Padilla caught people off guard. People weren't ready to see Danny Padilla that light. It was almost, you know, an unfair comparison, but Frank Zane in 1980 at the 1980 Olympia in Australia,
mm-hmm,
had gotten hurt before the contest and came into that contest maybe 10 pounds lighter than usual. And people said they scored him off, but he really was he looked awfully good in that contest. If you take a look at the pictures, Danny was a shock in this contest. Nobody had ever seen Danny look like that, and I think it took the judges a while to really appreciate what Danny had done. But overall, the muscularity, he had it in spades, and symmetry. Even though he was light and short, he was altogether at his best that day. I had him first. If I was judging, I had him first in the first two rounds, not the posing round, but I would have had him 20-20 and had him in first place in those first two rounds. Symmetrically in the first round and muscularity in the second round.
Yeah.
No fat there, I can tell you that.
Yeah, that's a great point, because I always remember back then in the 70s and 80s, there would always be one bodybuilder that came out of nowhere that nobody expected to be that good, like McAway in 82. And he was placed lower. They're usually placed lower because the judges weren't expecting him to be that good, and they didn't know how to place him, or they just didn't place him correctly, you know?
Yeah, I would agree with you. Again, maybe the second time that Danny would come in like this, or the second time McAway would come in like this, they would be ready for it. But the first time they do it, it's like they're paying their dues or something like that. And they're not ready to give it to them. But that's subjective. But it doesn't seem fair.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I heard from the people who were writing the articles after the contest was over was how they could place someone like Platts lower than Franco, even though Platts may have been unproportionate because his thighs were so big, but Franco had no thighs. So they're placing a guy who has no thighs over a guy who has thighs that are too big.
That's correct. But I reiterate that Platz's upper body had improved that much.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
Franco's lower body had atrophied that much. So it's one was getting better and one wasn't as good. And that's why you give the nod, if everything else is equal, to Platz. But not everything was equal. And Platz just came in, you know. And the audience, as I said to you, was sophisticated and knowing. And they saw what Platz was that day. And that's why he got the greatest round of applause. You know, it was they liked those thighs. Just like when Larry Scott would compete, as great as he was in every body part, you couldn't take your eyes off of his shoulders and his arms.
Right.
With Platz, you couldn't take your eyes off his legs, but if you did manage to take your eyes off his legs, you would see that his upper body was really at his best that day.
And I think that's why the crowd responded so much to him, because they could see the amount of hard work that he must have put in. He looked like he put on 15 pounds of muscle on his upper body alone.
He knew it, too.
All right, let's talk about Fennell Thorson. Let's talk about him first. So Thorson, who was a friend of Franco, gave him a 19 in the first round, a 20 in the second round, a perfect score, and a 20 in the third round.
You know as well as I do, you know, the posing round is supposed to be the person who does the routine the best.
Right.
But that, in my opinion, that round should never, ever, this is just me, this is just Roger Schwab, you know, and I was in the minority of opinion. Certainly Chris Dickerson or Ed Corney wouldn't have agreed with me. I don't think that round should necessarily have carried the weight of the muscularity and the symmetry rounds, because you're really judging a bodybuilder on the way they looked that night and the condition they got on, not necessarily their posing routine. Now, that being said, you know, some people improved tremendously, like Arnold's posing got infinitely better as his career went on. Mm-hmm. And Dickerson could charm anybody with that tremendous posing routine. But you can't ever tell me the Franco Colombo posing routine was a 20. I mean, it wasn't. You know, you should only have 120 in that round, and that should have been Chris Dickerson, because his posing was the best. But then again, by that posing round, you're going to get somebody who doesn't have the best physique winning the contest. And in my opinion, if you counted the third round, the posing round, it should have weighed less than the first two rounds. But again, I was in the minority of opinion.
Yeah. And Franco's routine, I thought, was off that year. He was posing to
Mozart. He did it to Mozart. And it was off, no doubt about it. But it was a difficult routine. But, you know, It was tough. And you know, back in those days, you know, bodybuilders, someone would pose to slow music and it would work. And then some would do hip hop or rap or, you know, something like that. And it would work, but some, it just didn't.
Yeah.
But regardless, the posing round to me should have been weighed less than the other two.
Yeah, Franco's strong points were his crunching poses. And he was, remember when he started off, he had his arms out and he was doing like whip type of poses and it wasn't working for him.
Correct.
Okay, so now you had Jim Mannion from the USA, who's also involved with bodybuilding today. He's the president of the IFBB. Franco, he gave a 19, a 20, and a 20. So a total of 59. And Danny, he gave a 20, a 19, and a 20. So
a total of 59.
59. So he had Danny and Franco tied for first.
Exactly. And as much, and I respect Jim Mannion and taking zero away from him because he was a very good judge. He's very smart and I think very objective. It's tough to finish a three rounds and give two guys a tie. You're not standing up for yourself on that one. I think you have to have enough respect for your scores to have a winner.
Then he had Tom and Roy Callender right after that. He gave them 19s for all three rounds for both of them, so they both got a 57. So they tied for, the third, right?
Yeah.
And then he gave Dickerson an 18, a 19, and a 19, so he only got a 56. So he had him below those top four.
But you see, even if you have a guy 56 and 59, that's still only 3 points difference.
Yeah.
That means, again, if somebody goes 60-60-60 with and gives somebody, you know, 60 points, whereas Jim might have given him 56, that guy could shoot right up there, you know, way higher. So it's too close together, those scores.
So this is really the problem with the point system. It's not that all the judges were stacked in Franco's favor. It's that it may be because he was Franco, just like because Arnold was Arnold. You know, then they were placing these guys higher because of their legendary status, maybe, and they were giving them 19s or 20s, and then their total points came out to be where they ended up winning the show.
The problem actually was that if you were going to have a point system, you could only have 20, 19, 18, and so on down the list, and there could not be two of anything.
Right.
So you couldn't have two. You couldn't score somebody 20 and give two 19s and two 18s. It should have been 20 down to six or whatever it's going to be, and that way you have a better chance of coming with a proper outcome than resulted that night.
Mm-hmm. Now Sven Ole Thorsen, even though he's a friend of Arnold and Franco's, he actually had Franco in second because he gave him a total of 59 points, and he gave Dickerson a perfect score of 60 points.
Yeah, but second place, I mean, he was only one
right.
point off again.
Right.
So you're seeing now what actually happened in the final outcome.
Right.
Franco might not have been first in everybody's scorecard, but he was so tight up there with everybody else that was going to be good enough.
Now, what was funny about Thorsen was he gave Danny in the symmetry round only a 17.
Now, how do you figure that?
And he gave him an 18 in the mandatories, and then he gave him 18 in the posing. Why do you think Padilla got, because he wasn't the only judge to do that. Why do you think Padilla got such low scores from some of the judges? Was it because they might have considered him too small, maybe?
No, because if you look back, what had Danny won previously?
Yeah,
no, he won the IFBB Mr. America, I think. Far back, I don't remember what year 70, it was.
77.
Okay, so this is 4 years later. He probably, between Mike Mentzer and Robbie Robinson, Danny had probably placed third and fourth
mm-hmm.
in some of the Grand Prix contests. And again, to some judges, you know, it's what have you done for me lately? And if you haven't placed high in those contests, and all of a sudden you're going to place high in a Mr. Olympia contest, it just didn't happen. And so the judge, instead of being as objective as possible, you were relying on the past history of the competitor and just didn't deem it enough to give him a high score. It's not fair. And that's why the judging panel was so important and in retrospect was so improper that day. The scoring system was wrong and the judges themselves, the judging panel was not as good as it should have been. And that's why it happened. I can't tell you why a judge, Sven Ola Thorsson, would give Danny 17s when giving somebody else 19 or 20s. It's just not the way I saw it. And I think the pictures of that contest, and there was plenty of them, is the proof of the pudding, so to speak.
Yeah, because people look at the pictures today, people who weren't around back then, and they go, well, how could Danny have not have won? Well, this is why. Like Sven Ola Thorsson put him fifth in the point totals. Franco Fossi from Italy had him fifth. And Dominic Cerdo from USA had him fifth. And then Doug Evans from Wales actually had him like at sixth.
Yeah. And you know, the other thing that people talked about at the time, well, you know what? After this contest, they said, you know, bodybuilders should judge the bodybuilders.
Right.
But, you know, that can be a problem. We're all bodybuilders. If you know, we all are trying to be bodybuilders, and some are, you know, better than others. But if you get a big, heavy set, you know, muscular guy, is going to vote for most likely the physique that is closest to his.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so there's always that problem. That's why, you know, you test these judges over and over again, and you get and if a judge proves that he's objective, then you keep him on that panel, regardless if there's three American judges. And that's what I said to Oscar State and Ben Weider. I said, I don't care about an international flavor. I know you do, but I think you should have three. I know these judges, and I can tell you're going to have your best outcome. One, if I count, my votes count, and if you bring in Wayne DeMilla, who was, you know, maybe not in high favor at the IFBB in those days, but and Mannion and Blomart and Winston Robertson, you're going to have the right outcome, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But, you know, that was just me. I was overruled.
Now, Judge Franco Fossi from Italy, like as you said, him and Franco go way back. They're both from Italy. They were friends, I think, when Franco just got into bodybuilding, right?
And he got 60 points, if I remember correctly.
Exactly.
20-20-20.
Now, this was probably the one judge that really favored it towards Franco because he gave Franco 20 points in each round, 60 points, perfect score. But the other bodybuilders, he didn't even bring them close. Dickerson and Callender, he had them tied for second with 57 points. So that's a three-point difference. Platt only with 56. And then he had Samir in fourth with 55. And then he had Danny, Joseph Wilcox, and Tinerino all with 54.
So that was it right there.
Yeah. That was the one that really made a difference. And then Dominic Certo from USA had Platts in first with a perfect score, 60 points. He had Franco and Roy Callender with 59 points each. Dickerson with 57. And he had Danny again in fifth with Joseph Wilcox with 56 points.
Yeah, that's right.
And now Doug Evans from Wales, you said he was probably not the most experienced judge, right?
Correct. Nice guy, real nice guy, but I don't think he had any, if I remember correctly, didn't have any international experience other than in the United Kingdom from where he was from.
Yeah, he had Franco with a perfect score also, 60 points. Dickerson right behind him with 59. He had Platts with 58. Calendar with 56. He had Tinerino and Johnny Fuller ahead of Danny Padilla with 54 points, and he gave Danny and Joseph Wilcox 51 points.
So again, they're all at the top. It's awfully tight at the top, and Franco is at the top or near the top from every judge.
Why do you think a lot of these judges did not notice or didn't judge correctly Franco's legs?
You tell me. It's a combination of Franco's great reputation, deserved great reputation, great physique. That's all I can think of. I think it was judging Franco Colombo on his previous achievements and the fact that he was, you know, that they liked him and he a great champion making a comeback. It was a tremendous story, but That being said, and I felt the same way about him also, but a great guy, a great champion, but not on this night. And he was
right.
Not judged on this night, in my opinion. And as I said to you twice already, the crowd was sophisticated, and they saw it happening at the end of the night. It was the total out-and-out booing contest. I mean, it was a disaster. And I was right in the middle of it, you know.
Right.
Danny Pizzillo came up afterwards, and he was so upset with everybody. And he pointed at me, and he said, "And you too." I said, "You know, well, quite frankly, I had you in first place. I didn't have a vote, but I understand you're upset." That wasn't enough for him. It was, this contest is rigged, you know. And a lot of them felt that way. And, you know, it wasn't rigged by any, at least it wasn't rigged in that somebody had told the judges how to judge.
Mm-hmm.
The judging panel had something to do with it, obviously. And as we've discussed, the point system had a lot to do with it. Everything fell into its place for Franco Colombo that night.
Yeah.
And he won the contest, and, you know, it happened. And there was a Mr. Olympia the next year and the next year and the next year, so it never fell apart. But for one night only, it was a sleepless night for the head judge of that contest, I can tell you that.
So, Roger, talk a little bit about what happened at the night show, because, as you said, the crowd just went, I've been a contest for 40 years. I've never heard a crowd boo that much. And people were actually throwing stuff at the stage.
By the nighttime, at the posing at night, the decision had already been made. The first three rounds had already been judged, so the posing that night was just for the audience.
Right.
And John Balick, who became the owner of Iron Man magazine, he mentioned to me afterwards, "This is a great contest," he said. And I said, "How did you have it?" And without telling him what had happened, or since I already knew the outcome, he had Franco in fifth, so forth and so on. I said, "Oh my God." And John Balick has a real good eye for this.
Yeah.
I said, "This is going to be pandemonium when they find out who won this contest." And the nighttime, the people were going nuts. I mean, even when the first five were announced, Callender, Platts, Danny Dickerson, and Franco, the crowd was great. The crowd was fine with that. You know, Wilkosch could have gotten in there. But other than that, they were okay with those five. It was when they went from five to one, especially when Platts was announced third and the only two left were Dickerson and Franco.
Right.
That's when it went. It didn't matter. I think if Dickerson had won that night, there would have been an uproar also, although not quite as much. If Danny had won or if Platts had won, we wouldn't be having this conversation today.
Right, exactly.
But the crowd went crazy, and justifiably so. But I don't think the IFBB was too shaken by this. I really don't, because, you know, the controversy didn't bother the magazines. It gave them more to write about. I'm sure Rick Wayne didn't mind the results of this contest because he had more to write about. Not only that, he had a book to write afterwards, Muscle Wars. So a lot of people gained out of this. And quite frankly, in 1982, when we went back for the Olympia in Wembley, England, it was all calmed down again. I mean, people were talking about it. But it's another year, another contest. And there was no outcry when Dickerson won in 1982. Mm-hmm. So for all, you know, for purists like you and me who really, really care about this game so much and, you know, have so much to talk about, did it really matter to most of the community after that year? Well, I think it gives them something to talk about in 1980 and 1981. But as you've seen, you know, bodybuilding has continued, although certainly not in the path or direction that I would have chosen if I had stayed in the sport.
Yeah. Now, when you were going to the evening show, Roger, and you knew the scores and you knew what was going to happen, and you knew who you thought should have been in the top three based on looking at the guys up close, were you nervous? Were you nervous about what was going to happen with the audience?
I was sitting right in the front row next to Jim Mannion and the other judges. And so, you know, I stood my ground. I mean, you know, again, I didn't have a vote, and so I was somewhat vindicated. but not really, because I was there and I could have done something about it. I probably could have done something about 1980 also. Mm-hmm. So I was somewhat influential in the two most controversial contests that were ever held. But was I nervous? No. Was I unhappy and upset about it? Yes. So was Reg Park, who was sitting on the other side of me. You know, he's a story in himself, John. We should talk about him one day. He was just a magnificent forerunner. You know, he was just a great, great, humble champion.
Mm-hmm.
But he was there, and it was like, look, he looked at me right afterwards, and he said, oh, my God, what's happening here, as well as everybody did. But then Ben Weider got up and said, you know, Franco Colombo, and he got in, and the booing was just, it was just at a decibel that I don't remember since Larry Scott, in a very positive way, won the Mr. Olympia in 1975. That was the greatest positive response I ever remember to a contest, or 1965, excuse me.
65, yeah.
And in 65 and 66, but more so in 65. And this was the greatest displeasure that I remember in a bodybuilding contest. I happen to be at both of them. So that's the way it was on that night in 1981, John Hansen.
And what was interesting also, Roger, was at night, we were talking about the point system. They used the point system for the prejudging, but at the night show, they used the placement system after the pose down, and they placed the bodybuilders in the order they thought they should place.
That contest judging was over before the evening show. That's what counted. Those first three rounds, and that was it. Whatever else you're seeing there, which I don't remember, had nothing to do with the outcome of that contest. That contest was determined in the daytime. We all, or at least myself and Oscar State, knew the winners of that contest before the nighttime show.
Yeah, I think what they did, from what I understood from reading it, was in 1980 and 81, they had the judges place the bodybuilders top six in the pose down. They had them give a first to the guy they thought should win, and then that one point was added to their prejudging total.
So what were the placings at the end?
So Jacques Blumhardt put Tom Platz first, even though he scored Callender the highest in the prejudging. He gave him a one. Jim Mannion had Padilla at first. He was the only judge to do that. Winston Roberts had
Dickerson,
yeah. Sven Ole Thorsen had Dickerson. Franco Fossi gave Franco the first. Dominic Certo gave Tom Platz the first. And Doug Evans gave Franco the first.
Okay, so Franco had two. I think Dickerson had two.
Mm-hmm.
Platz had two and Padilla had one, or is that right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Well, so that wouldn't have changed anything, which it didn't. Right.
Right. It didn't. Yeah. Yeah. That was interesting.
Yeah, and that was it, and that was the night.
So as we said, it really wasn't a fix. It was just that it was the failure of the point system, and a couple of inexperienced judges who just placed Franco too high.
I think you could say that. It was the wrong judging panel and the wrong judging system, and everything played perfectly into the outcome of that contest.
Right. And what's interesting is the fallout from this. Franco obviously never competed again. Dickerson went on to win the Olympia the next year. Platz, really, this contest made his career, because after this contest, he became the most popular bodybuilder ever. He became the fan favorite.
Yeah, definitely. And unfortunately, he tore his bicep, and that was really the end of him.
Yeah. And then Roy Callender and Danny, I think that was their peak, and I don't think they ever – I think Royce didn't compete again until 84, right?
I don't remember, but I would agree with you that a lot of bodybuilders hit their peak that night, at least three, Callender, Platz, and Padilla.
Yeah. And Danny, unfortunately, too, never really achieved that condition again.
No, I think that's why Danny was so upset, because, again, Danny used to compete 20 pounds heavier, but he didn't seem to lose. I mean, his size was still great, even his little body weight. And
Oh, yeah, he didn't lose anything.
But he was, he had zero fat on. He looked just unbelievable that night.
Well, you got to feel for that guy, because, you know, ever since he was competing since 76, 77, I mean, everybody always told him, Dan, you got the perfect physique. You just got to come and rip. You'll beat everybody if you come and rip. It doesn't matter if you're only 5'3". And he finally comes and rips.
You're right, John. We see it the same way.
All right, Roger. Well, thank you again for joining us on the podcast. We will definitely have you back again because you got a lot of great stories and you were there for so many historic moments. But I think we really analyzed these judges' score sheets, and it was great hearing your perspective because you were right there on stage with these guys who were the head judge. And it's probably, like I said, the most controversial Mr. Olympia ever. But it was an experience, that's for sure, and I'm glad we were both there to see it.
So am I, and it was a pleasure to talk to you. Stay in touch, John.
All right, Roger, I will. Thanks again for joining us.
Always.
Bye. All right, take care.
All right, thank you, everybody, for joining us for Episode 1, Season 3 of the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast. I want to thank Roger Schwab for, again, joining us on the show, and I want to thank Redcon 1, Old School Labs, BalanceBodyLabs.com, and Six Pack Bags for sponsoring this episode. Join us next week when our special guest will be John Balick. And John Balick was the owner of Iron Man magazine from 1986 until just about a year or two ago. But back in the 1980s, when the 1981 Mr. Olympia took place, John was one of the premier photographers for Joe Weider's magazine, and he was there taking pictures of the 1981 Mr. Olympia. So he's got a great viewpoint and some great opinions of that contest. So we're going to be talking to Mr. John Balick next week on the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast. Thanks for joining us, everybody. We'll see you next week. No.